You're listening to The Aaron Carrera Show. And now your host, Aaron Carrera.
Hey, hey, hey. Good morning, everybody. It is me, your host, Aaron. Welcome. It is Thursday, August 15th, 10:02 a.m. Pacific Time. Coming at you from Los Angeles, California, where looking out my window, it is an endless blue sky. Every once in a while, you just get one of those gorgeous, gorgeous, endless blue skies. And in Italy, it is Ferragosto, the Feast of the Virgin Mary, or the Assumption of the Virgin Mary. I am not Catholic, so it's not my deal. But what I love in general is holidays and festivals, especially when they have something to do with the divine feminine. And Mother Mary is certainly one of our wonderful divine feminine goddesses, or she's not the goddess, I guess, but to me, one an emblem and a symbol of the divine feminine. And so I want to say thank you to all who nurture, just like Mother Mary. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about self-alignment and self-love as part of manifesting and silencing that inner critic. And I want to give a little bit of a caveat. So I decided recently, based on the calls that I've been getting over on One to Listen, which, by the way, if you want to come find me, this show is brought to you by my work at One to Listen. So you can come find me at onetolisten.com/Aaron. That's Aaron with an E. But I've been getting a lot of calls about two things. One is about like financial abundance or lack thereof. And the other is about lack of love or romance, but specifically about people feeling like they made a grave mistake and then doubling back and then beating themselves up over it. So I decided that in September, we're going to be doing, I'm going to be running a little bit of an abundance program. So if you've ever called me or you're on my mailing list for spiritual and psychic work, every day I'm going to be sending out an email with a little tip or affirmation or practice related to abundance. And I'm also going to be offering a couple of meditations over on 1-2 Academy. I'll be announcing those shortly, soon, to get ourselves in alignment for abundance, to practice visioning abundance. And then maybe another one to wrap up at the end of the month. And I want to do that because I feel like right now it is so easy to go to the yeah buts. It is so easy to intellectualize our way out of creating the lives we want and say, okay, yeah, but Aaron, I don't have this, that, or the other thing, and so I can't possibly be abundant. Yeah, but Aaron, the world is unfair. Yeah, but Aaron, all the things that are true, and we can find all the evidence that we want to be true. But I want to tell you a little story. So everybody take a deep breath in. I'm going to tell you two stories. Two very weird, simple, fun stories about manifesting in abundance. We are all very powerful people. I'm sitting here looking at four-leaf clovers all over my house that I've collected, right? There are things that we believe and don't believe about ourselves. I believe that I can easily find four-leaf clovers, and so I do. Now, lately, I haven't found as many, but I haven't been slowly strolling, paying attention to nature either, right? I've been mainly walking very fast with my husband or walking very fast listening to podcasts. That is not a way to connect with four-leaf clovers and their magic. So, and then and even so, every once in a while, walking fast, I'll still spot one and be like, wait, and stop and grab it. But for the most part, right, there's a combination in me finding four-leaf clovers wherein I believe I can find them, and I've found hundreds and thousands of them. I know that there is a relationship to the way that it happens that I've not been engaging with as much as usual. And so if I wanted to, I could say to myself, oh, well, I guess the era of four-leaf clovers is done. And then I could just find all the proof and reasons why that is true. Or I could say, oh, I'm going to stay open. If the four-leaf clovers want me to find them, then they'll find me and I'll find them. They'll tell me when to slow down, right? Like I can feel right now all this tension around it, right? So everybody take a nice, long, slow, deep breath in and out. Just see if you can let your body just melt 5%. So here are two stories of things I've manifested that sound magic. But I want us to get into the alignment and receiving mode so that you can have this for yourself. And then we're going to get to the thing about romance and doubling back, okay? Because that's part of this too. But first, getting into financial abundance or manifesting or luck or creating the things we want. So when I was, I don't know, this was right before I moved to Los Angeles. I was living in Minneapolis. And when I was a little girl, I used to watch Beaches with my friend Sarah and her sister Jen at sleepovers again and again and again, on over and over again. And I loved Bette Midler so much. So right before I moved to Los Angeles, my another friend of mine named Josh and I loved Bette Midler, just loved her. And Josh had this boyfriend who, when they were dating, and said, I want to take you and Aaron to see Bette Midler when she comes in concert to the Target Center. And we were like, yay! So he bought tickets. Well, then Josh and his boyfriend broke up. And his boyfriend, Sean, called me and said, hey, Aaron, I had to sell those tickets. But don't worry, I'm going to buy new tickets and I'm still taking you and Josh to that concert because Josh and I are still friends. And he said, don't say anything to Josh. I said, okay, no problem. I won't. I can keep a secret. And Josh and he were still friends. They'd been on again, off again for years and years. And so the night of the concert came, we made plans to have dinner at a restaurant down the block from the Target Center, downtown Minneapolis. And we went to dinner and Sean didn't show up. And Josh was like, where is he? And I was like, you know, I'm going to tell you something weird that happened. Sean called me and said he had to sell the tickets, but that he was going to buy new ones. And Josh was very angry. He said, oh, he sold the tickets. There are no tickets. There may never have been tickets in the first place. And I said, well, let's just call him and see. So Josh called, no answer. So I called and Sean answered and said, oh, the tickets are here at my house in Plymouth, which is a suburb maybe 40 minutes from downtown Minneapolis. Give and take the time it would take to check out of the restaurant, walk over to the parking ramp, leave the parking ramp, drive to Plymouth, drive back downtown, park again, get back into the Target Center. We would miss the first part of the concert. And I said, well, we can't possibly make it to Plymouth. Click, we got disconnected. I called back, phone was dead. Oh, surprise, surprise. And Josh was like, what should we do? And I was like, let's go over to Will Call and see if they have the tickets under his name. And Josh was like, there are no tickets. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to drive all the way out to Plymouth to find out there's no tickets. Let's just see what we can do at the Target Center. And Josh was like, oh, okay. So we walk over to the Target Center. We go to Will Call. It's not under Sean's last name, not under Josh's last name, not under my last name. Josh is so angry. He's like, let's just leave. And I said, you know what? I don't know. Let's just wait, see what happens. Josh was like, wait for what? Sean's not going to come. And I'm like, I don't know. Let's just wait. Now, friends, I just had a feeling, a very small, quiet voice feeling that we should wait. I was not getting angry at Sean. Josh couldn't hear it because he was so angry at Sean. I was just present and available. And I just had a feeling like we should wait. So we stood at the entrance waiting, looking for Sean, who was never going to come. And people were filing in, all excited for the concert. And finally, there was that little ding, ding, ding to let you know that take your seats now, the concert's starting. And everybody was leaving. We were like the only people practically left in the lobby. And this man walked up to us and said, are you waiting for your tickets? And I said, yeah, but we don't think they're coming. And he said, well, and he looked out the door. He looked back at us. He said, you know, I was supposed to be taking a date and I don't think she's coming. So here, take mine. And we said, really? And he said, yeah. And we hugged and we said, thank you. And he was so like, oh, don't hug me. Because, of course, it's Minnesota, you know. But we said, thank you, thank you. And we walked in and they were front row balcony seats. Amazing seats. Such incredible seats. And the show was incredible. And then Josh and I had a TV show in Minneapolis called Josh and Sandy. And these people at one point tapped on our shoulders and said, "Excuse us, are you Josh and Sandy?" And we said, "Yeah." And they laughed because it was like this crazy, it was like way ahead of its time. It was on public access. It was like a little bit like Mary Hartman. So way after its time or way before its time. It was a little bit like Mary Hartman, a little bit like the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Very silly, not very good production quality. Sometimes very farcical, very, just very, very Xena warrior princess sometimes, you know, sometimes slapstick, sometimes farcical, just really sometimes sticky, but really hilarious if you're into that kind of comedy. And then after the show, we decided to go get a drink because we were so buzzed. We're like, let's just go have a drink at the bar across the street, which was attached to a hotel, which happened to be, we found out once we walked into the bar and we saw the backup singers, the hotel where the backup singers and Bette and her band were all staying, and had been the last night of the concert. So Bette came down to say thank you to her singers, and we didn't get to talk with her, but we got to meet her and say thank you for an amazing show and a lifelong inspiration, being a lifelong inspiration. It was just amazing. So I just had a feeling that we should wait and see what happened. And we just manifested those tickets. Now, the guy could have been a scalper waiting to trying to sell the tickets. He maybe even could have been trying to low-key sell them to us. But he just gave them to us. It was an amazing night. And I feel like that is what it takes, right? A little patience, a little openness. Don't rush to a feeling too fast, right? Even I think you have to be careful. I know all the manifestors say, get into that good feeling. And I'm like, I think it's a little different than a good feeling. Because if you go to the Pollyanna or the overly good or the manic or the hyper phony, you're manifesting something untrue. So you might manifest something a little untrue for yourself. And then you end up manifesting exactly what your focus is, right? Because God just reverberates on the focus. Spirit, universe just reverberates on the focus. But if you just stay in your heart, open, here, available, right? Okay, so I told you all about my Santa Barbara manifestation, right? I really wanted a vacation. I think I told you this 2 weeks ago. Really wanted a vacation. And I was caught up in my head of like, well, I've put money toward promoting the book, and I've put money toward this, and I need to save money for when I travel at the holidays to see my family. So as much as I'd like a little, you know, like a honeymoon of some kind with my husband, like that's just not happening right now. And it was actually that somebody said to me, "Erin, just manifest a trip. Just manifest it. I know you can." And this person who said this to me is very important to me, and I trust 1,000% emotionally with her opinions. And I was like, you know what? You're right. She's like, don't even think about it. Just say, I'm manifesting a trip for myself, a little vacation, and then do it. And I said, you know what? Okay, great. I will. And I just felt it in that moment. I felt the acceptance of it. I'm not going to say the truth of it. I accepted it. I accepted her belief in me. And I chose to allow and accept and believe it for myself that I really was powerful enough to manifest a little trip for myself. And that is when, a few days later, I got an email that I had won an Instagram sweepstakes, you know, one of those things where it's like, follow these accounts and tag a friend, you will be entered into this giveaway. I got a notice, an email that indeed I had won two nights at a hotel in Santa Barbara, dinner at two different restaurants in Santa Barbara, tastings at two different wineries. Just have to use it before the end of the year. Well, that's where my husband and I eloped. We're so excited. I was like, oh my goodness. We get basically a little mini anniversary trip because I wasn't even the first person who won. The first person who won the giveaway, they did not accept the prize. So I was even the second drawing. And it's like, I mean, how incredible. I manifested that trip with my friend because we believed it was possible. Now, what else is possible? Maybe next I'm going to manifest a 10-day trip to Tahiti, right? Or all kinds of awesome things are possible. Maybe I'm going to manifest that, you know, I'm producing a film and we're looking for the last 2/3 of the financing. I'm going to manifest that somebody listening to this show actually has an incredibly talented teenager. They want to get into acting and an extra $200,000 that they are willing to put into a movie that has a sales agent and has distribution and has 2 stars attached because they want to get their kid, very talented teenager, started and they're willing to help finance the movie to get that going. I mean, right? Like anything is possible. So I'm sharing all of that because it's important to remember that you can do this. You can do it and you don't have to worry about it. I know there's a lot to worry about in this world. And I know it's easy to find all of the reasons why something's not good enough or why it's not going to work or why, yeah, but some people are magical and others are not. Or, yeah, well, maybe I can make money, but I can't find love. Or, yeah, well, you know, right now I'm not making enough money, so I can't get this thing that I want or do this thing that I want. And I'm like, I just don't think that should hold anyone back. I've traveled the world whether I had money or not. And I want people to find the kind of abundance that is inclusive of more than just cash. Yes, the number in the bank is important in a way, because that's the world we live in. So I once read this study that said that there's a certain percentage of people who actually really don't care about money. A lot of them are artists. Not that all artists don't care about money, but that there is a certain psychological makeup where a percentage, I forget what the percentage was, 15, 20%, literally don't care. I am one of those people. I literally don't care. I do not care about money. I care about freedom to do fun things, support my life, take care of myself and the people I love, visit the people and family I want to visit, right? That I don't care about money at all. I care about freedom and health and joy and serving people and helping people, right? So I had to learn to care about the number in the bank. And even then, I know that I am well and safe. I mean, I know that I will always have work if I need it. I will always have income separate from work if I need it. I just know it. I did not always know that, even though I was always having that be proven to me. I've always paid my rent on time. I've always paid car payments on time. I've always paid all my bills on time, right? I haven't always paid them off fully, but I've always, always, always had it happen for me. I've always found a way, either through my own labor or somewhere else. Now, I know that even though for years I was like, what if I don't? What if I don't? What if I don't? What if I end up homeless? What if I end up homeless? What if I... Finally, I had to talk myself out of that. And that's partially why I want to talk about silencing the inner critic and getting in alignment with ourselves. But I just now want to bring in the love piece as well. Because I've had so many of you beautiful, beautiful, beautiful people call me recently to say, well, I decided I wasn't interested in this guy and I told him so nicely and now I'm regretting the decision. Did I make a mistake? And usually people are worrying that they're making that mistake because they're lonely, because they haven't found the replacement guy yet or a new guy or the guy. Okay, usually that's it. I promise you, if somebody is your guy or your gal or your person, the universe will put them in front of you again and grow you. You will have to grow, maybe. Maybe not. I'm going to get to this. But you're not going to mess it up and then that's it and you're going to be miserable forever. It's amazing to me that we jump to, oh God, I messed it up with somebody who might have been the one and now I'm going to be miserable forever. And then we love to dwell on that and make that true for years on end. That's a part of that unrequited love cycle sometimes, or limerence, being addicted to the feeling of falling in love, being addicted to the drama around love or romance. And just as an old married lady, because you know I've been with my man for 12 years now and he's so wonderful. And honestly, I'm not too bad either as a partner. I'm not great all the time. I'm not perfect. Certainly, sometimes I leave the kettle on. But what's most important, really, is finding somebody that you can really share a vision for life with. That's what it is. So I remember this guy that I was dating. Oh, I did love this guy. But I knew he wasn't for me. I knew he wasn't right for me. Now, this guy was actually my favorite ex-boyfriend of all time. He was my favorite ex-boyfriend because he was the first boyfriend who really showed me an amazing time and made it all about me. He gave the best foot massages. He was an amazing cook. This next bit is not suitable for work. He was amazing in the sack. He was just great in bed. He was fun and wild and crazy, and he made everything a joy except for his problems, which were that he's a lovable loser. What I mean by that is he's a guy who thinks the world is always against him and he always loses. And so he makes that true. He makes those into self-fulfilling prophecies. This is somebody who was a type 1 diabetic, who had a little bit of a drug problem, a little bit of a drinking problem, and smoked cigarettes, which is a deal breaker for me. Cigarettes is a deal breaker for me. I'm a singer with a lung issue. So, if you smoke, great, good for you. We just can't be in love. That's all. And I remember at one point in a relationship, I said, you've got 1 year to quit one of these things. And I'm talking about, this was a man who was in the emergency room every few months having some kind of insulin shock because he did not take care of himself. And I just kept thinking to myself, do I really want to marry and have children with somebody who is doing these things and every year it gets worse? So I said, I told him this at 23 years old. I said, if you don't show me that you are going to start taking your life seriously and take care of yourself, how can I rely on you when things really get hard? You know, we're relatively young now. I guess by this point I was maybe 25, and he was 10 years older. He was 10 years older than me, by the way. So fewer excuses for him. Anyway, he had a year and he didn't do anything. And then 1 month before, I said, you know, remember what I said? I mean it. You've got a month. And he said, yeah, I know. I'm going to do it. And then it came and passed. And I broke up with him for a variety of reasons, including that one. And he kept saying, please get back together with me and then I will quit. There was nothing in me that believed it, right? Nothing. So I bring him up because that is somebody who I actually knew wasn't right for me. And I broke up with him in the beginning days of our relationship and then 9/11 happened. So we were together like 3 years. 9/11 happened, and I broke up with him because I just didn't think he was right for me, and I really wanted to move to California. Of course, I did end up moving to California just a few years later, but right after I broke up with Mike, in fact. But, oops, I said his name. Sorry. Anyway, he's not listening. It's fine. And besides, he's my favorite ex-boyfriend, so... But I also did call him a lovable loser. Oh, well. Anyway, sorry. I got scared, though. 9/11 happened, and I got scared. And I got worried that I'd made a mistake. And I called him. And we got back together. Now, I don't think any of this was a mistake because I wasn't really ready to move to California. And I wasn't really ready to pursue my dreams for real. And I wasn't really calling him to get back together to marry him, but to give myself, and I am sorry about this for what I'm about to say, but I know it is true, to give myself another postponement and another excuse. And I wonder sometimes if when we think, I broke up with someone and then I regret it, if we're just coming up with a story like I came up with after 9/11, because we're not quite ready. Maybe we're just not quite ready, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm suggesting that if you are living in deep regret over a decision you made, what if it really was the right decision at that moment? You know, in my life, I turned down so many amazing opportunities. I turned down free ride scholarships to USC and NYU because I was afraid. Yes, because my mother begged me to stay home, and I had a secret boyfriend and an eating disorder, whatever, sure. But the truth is because I was afraid. I turned down the singing teacher met me. heard me at Macaroni Grill and offered to connect me to this famous singing teacher in New York, and I never called because I was afraid. Now I'm like, you idiot. Oh my God, you could have been the next Josh Groban. Oh my God, what were you thinking? Well, I wasn't ready. I just wasn't. And I don't regret it anymore, even though I understand what I lost, and we'll never know what could have happened. You don't know if I would have been the next Brittany Murphy and died of, you know, being pneumonia and bulimia and drug addiction in the shower, or if I would have been the next Josh Groban having an amazing career. Who knows? Who knows? We'll never know. It doesn't matter. Those were the choices I made. I learned from those things. I became this person I am now. Right now, my life is so beautiful. I'm so blessed. I have people I love who love me. I've learned a lot. I'm able to be of service. I'm able to understand the value of freedom in my life. I know what it's like to heal from mental illness. I can offer that to other people. I know what it's like to heal from unrequited love relationship addiction and limerence addiction. I can offer that to people. I know what it's like to overcome anxiety, or I'm overcoming it anyway, and how to manage it. I know what it's like to change the tune on abundance. I feel so lucky. I feel so lucky. So I'm sharing all of this to say, what if it's not the case that, sure, you make mistakes, but what if that isn't the defining thing that's ruining your life? What if you made a choice that you now see was one choice that maybe from today's perspective was not the best choice, but you don't know that in 10 years you might not look back and say, actually, that was a great choice for these other reasons, right? And because we don't know how the world would have turned out in these alternate realities, like if you've ever read Midnight Library, which is a very sweet book about a woman who gets to go into this library at midnight and read all these books of her life, how her life would have turned out if she had made a few other different choices. And every life had its own degree and of both negative and positive. Every life was fraught with peril and had beauty to it. There were some lives where she was more miserable than others, and there were some lives that were full of all kinds of success, but other things were different. So there's so much possibility, and the idea that we just want to harp on the mistake we made and how it ruined our lives, I really think that is very damaging, not only to your mental health, but is also very damaging to what you're creating for your future and for your today. So that is why I wanted to come. I came up with a list of ways that we could say no thank you to our inner governor, right? Negative thoughts are everywhere, folks. And I'm not talking about faking it either. You know, like I know there's, for example, a lot of you know that I have, part of my family is Jewish. So we have Jewish folks in our family. It's very hard for Jewish folks right now for a variety of reasons, but anti-Semitism is on the rise. And I'm not saying that folks who are or anyone who's experiencing racism or sexism, I'm not saying that stuff is easy. That stuff is real, or people who experience fat phobia, right? That stuff is real. It is difficult. It's hard to go through. But what I am talking about is what we can work with within ourselves. So negative thoughts, yes, they might be a product of your environment. They might be a product of your experiences, how you were raised, the people that you were surrounded by when you were young or even now, trauma that you've gone through. And it is normal that there are going to be negative thoughts and negative thoughts about yourself from time to time, right? But, and you're not alone. I mean, everyone, well, not everyone. I suppose there's probably a few unicorns out there who don't have negative thoughts and a few psychopaths out there who don't have negative thoughts. But for the most part, everyone is going to go through this. But I really believe there are steps that we can take to silence that inner critic and really improve our thinking. So the first thing I'm going to say is, So what? So what? This has helped me so much in life, y'all. Like when I, for years, when I was like, oh no, I broke up with the love of my life. Not my favorite ex-boyfriend, by the way. And also, incidentally, the guy that I thought was the love of my life turned out not to be. The love of my life is my husband. Isn't that fun? So I was wrong. So, but it was really helpful to me when I would be like, oh no, I made these mistakes. Oh no, I did that. Oh no, my body isn't perfect. When I started saying, so what? And I also started saying, oh well, my body's not perfect. So what? Oh my God, it was so liberating. So liberating. Like I'm not saying like that's that always that easy, but in a way it kind of is. It's like, you know, I don't have to dwell on my body. I don't. Or whatever I am criticizing about it at the moment. I don't have to dwell on a mistake I made when I was 17 years old, when I was a child who was overly influenced by people in her life that had a different agenda for her than she had for herself. I don't have to dwell. So what? Oh well. Okay, moving on. All right then, moving on. When I would ruminate on this ex-boyfriend of mine, and he would just invade my thoughts, every time he would invade my thoughts, I got to the point where I said, you know what? I'm going to schedule time to think about him and only him. I can ruminate, I can fantasize, I can imagine, I can do whatever I want during that time. But as soon as I would notice the invasive, intrusive thought about him, I would go, oh, nope, remember, I've scheduled that for today at 3:05, and I've got 10 minutes to sit there and think about him. And after a while, I didn't need to schedule it. I got to the point where I was like, oh, he showed up in my thought again. I don't want to think about him. Nope. It's the same thing. I notice it. I practice this in my life because, of course, negative thoughts come up all the time. Oh, no, I said this way and I made a mistake in the way I said it. Oh, well, look, sure, if I said something mean to someone, which would at this point not be on purpose. But if I did, then of course I need to make an apology, make an amends, do whatever I need to do because I believe in that. But so what? Like if I made a mistake, so what? If I didn't do the best gig, so what? If my voice isn't in perfect shape, oh well, I'll do my best to take care of it. To go to the fear, the worry, the negative, the oh my God, the sky is falling, right? To Chicken Little. No, I don't have to be ruled by that energy, okay? So practice number one is, oh, well, so what? And practice number two is just say no, right? Just say no and move on. You can take a moment to assess if there's something that is actually worth doing around it, but be very careful in that. Ask yourself first who's running the show, because if it's your ego comes from what? History. And history wants to keep repeating itself so that the brain doesn't have to work too hard because the brain just needs as much energy as possible to run other functions. So I'm going to give a couple of examples. If you're like, well, you know what, I said this thing to this guy and I really feel like and it was a mistake to break up with him and I've texted him 3 times and he hasn't gotten back to me. So I think what I need to do is text him 1 more time. No. No. Stop. Stop, drop, and roll, my friends. Do not keep texting. Do not keep emailing. Leave it alone. Okay? So what? Move on. I promise you, if that guy is for you, the universe will put him in front of you or he will come around again. And if not, you need to move on and counteract that worry that keeps you caught up in the loop. Okay? See what I'm saying? If you've got a family relationship and you had a fight with that family relationship and then you made an apology, but that person won't let it go, you don't need to keep apologizing unless, of course, that's appropriate. I'm just saying there's very few instances in which you need to keep apologizing for whatever it was, right? There are instances where you can make a living amends, and a living amends is where you change your behavior with somebody, right? If you used to have a terrible temper and you used to rage attack people, apologizing for that is important. And then making a living amends where you are extremely careful and mindful about raging on other people. Yes. Okay. But that's not what we're talking about here. All right. I am going to include, what am I at? Number 3. positive affirmations. Positive affirmations, declarations, those things, I know people find them cheesy, but I actually think they're great. But you can either do things like, I can do this, or, you know, I'm having a tough day, but actually my track record for getting through tough days is really good. Or I'm having a tough day, but I know that I help a lot of other people get out of a tough day, so I can help myself get out of a tough day. Or I am strong, I'm smart, or like EFT tapping, even though I'm having this headache, I completely love and accept myself. Or you could say, I love myself even when it's hard. I'm worthy of love and kindness. Even though I'm anxious, I know this will pass, right? Positive affirmations like this and incorporating them with your issue can actually help you challenge that negative thinking while validating your feelings. That's why it's valuable. The next, number four is meditation, prayer, and mindfulness. I wanted to say specifically a loving kindness meditation, you know, where you do loving kindness, where you offer loving kindness to yourself, to the person you love most in the world, to someone you like, to someone you don't like, right? But mindfulness, it's just like how I opened the show. I opened the show talking about Bette Midler being in the here and now without judgment. I chose not to judge Sean for whatever shenanigans were happening. He probably had the intention of rebuying the tickets or just wanted me to think he was still a good guy, and or he was just being a drama queen or whatever it was. I just chose to let it go, to be here and now without judgment. And then that's how I could hear that small voice saying, no, hang out and see what happens. So when it talks about, when we're talking about mindfulness and loving kindness, I feel that, especially for those of us who are perfectionists or hard on ourselves, the more that I practice just being here and not judging, and when I catch myself judging others, including myself, I practice changing that script to, oh, that's interesting that I'm judging this person. What's underneath that? I just try to get curious about it, right? So, for example, if I might be judging somebody for singing flat, which, by the way, is a problem I have sometimes because I have such a big voice, and the thing is about singers is that you can't really truly hear yourself. Did you know that? Singers, sure, you can hear where you're in pitch, but you don't actually hear your own voice. That's why, and I'm sure you've had that experience of hearing your voice like on a voice message. It's like, wait, that's what I sound like, right? How it sounds internally is my voice, how it sounds internally to me is very different than how it sounds out there. I like my voice inside better, except for when I have a little, listen to my little vocal issue coming through, right? It's interesting. What would be underneath that, right? Is, oh, well, I have that same issue. I've been told, I've heard it in recordings. So I want to learn why, where is it coming from? What's the vocal mechanism making someone be flat? What is the habit or practice? Is it tension in the jaw? Is it control? Is it not opening up the upper resonators enough, right? I'm talking technically, but it's the same thing with any judgment, right? What's underneath that? Now, I know that I am sort of, I feel like lately, and maybe this is just because I've been having to spend time in a certain aspect of Los Angeles culture, but I know that I am like this, you know, good-hearted Midwestern. I don't feel Midwestern except for when it comes to the stereotype of the good-hearted, you know, good-natured, sure, I'll pull over to the side of the road and help you change your tire kind of thing, which isn't relegated only to the Midwest. I know people all over the world can be kind and helpful. I know it because I've seen it everywhere I've gone all over the world. Never have I been to a single place where there's only selfish people and there are no unhelpful people in my experience. However, I've lately seen a lot more judgment that surprises me. And I think it surprises me because I'm working so hard on the opposite of that, because I think it's such an unpleasant way to live. I think it's so self-limiting. You have so much less fun. Your thoughts are so much more negative and toxic. It's just not fun. So I feel like there is so much value in practicing non-judgmental practices as often as possible, mindfulness and loving kindness as often as possible, mainly because it is, I think, a better way to live, more fun, a more enjoyable way to live for yourself. I mean, in the end, it's loving kindness and compassion for others, but it actually becomes selfish because you just have a better life. You have a lot more fun, I think. That's been my experience, anyhow. Maybe it's super fun to be really selfish all the time, I guess. But then, you know, you need leverage to make sure that people, you need leverage like you can afford to pay people to be terrible all the time or something. I don't know. I don't think it's wrong to be selfish all the time if it's self-care. I'm talking about being overly judgy of other people. So moving on, self-compassion. Self-compassion, which I had wrapped up into loving kindness, but I really do think there is value in practicing kindness toward yourself over judging, right? Like, think about it. Like, if you've got an addiction, let's say you have, for example, a food addiction, an eating disorder. So you have a need that isn't being fulfilled. And so you reach for that thing that is an attachment that you have been trained, not even intellectually. Usually these are visceral, chemical, biological, hormonal, emotional things that may have been indoctrinated in us even before we had speech, right? It may have come from a family line, through genetics, through our environment. So you reach for that thing that is going to help you fulfill that need, even though it doesn't actually fulfill the need, but that's the habit. And then on top of that, once you are in the middle of it, you go, oh my God, I'm doing it again. I'm binging. Or, oh my God, I'm doing it again. I'm over exercising and it's bad for my health. And, oh my God, I've ruined my bones this way. Or, oh my God. And then you're mean to yourself. You judge yourself for that. So then you actually are putting yourself right back into the loop, right? So if you can let go of some of that judging of yourself. One of my issues that I struggle with is being disappointed in humanity and being disappointed in how mean humans can be. And I'm human, by the way. But I think one of the values that I've really been practicing has been so helpful lately is leaning into the common elements of humanity rather than isolating. Leaning into where I see kindness in people, looking for the good in others, looking for something I like in people, looking for the good in people, particularly in people I don't like. Not because I need to be friends with everybody, but I seek to bless and understand that we are all humans in this together. And the other aspect that I'll say for that is learning to be mindful of the present rather than over-identifying, like I had talked about before, right? Like, rather than saying, oh no, I made this one mistake, now my life is ruined, catastrophizing, right? So speaking to yourself in a kind manner, taking care of yourself even when things are hard. I remember when I was in the throes of my eating disorder really badly, I would sometimes just not go to, I would go to bed without washing my face, or, you know, I know there's that dumb book, Girl, Wash Your Face. Maybe it's a good book. I don't know. I haven't read it. Girl, Wash Your Face. Sometimes, rather, when I was really struggling with bulimia, it was better for me to just go to bed than go into the bathroom and wash my face, because otherwise I might purge. But over the years, once I stopped purging, I started really giving myself the time and space to do all of the self-care I needed, right? That's just a small example from my own personal life, but I know you can come up with your own. Learning to accept yourself when you make a mistake. Oh, that is so huge. I beg of you, please love and accept yourself even when you fall short or make a mistake, because I promise you, you are lovable and you are worthy. And I bet I love you. So if you're listening, I probably love you. So I accept you. I do. Okay. Leaning into humanity can include learning to be vulnerable with others, not assuming the worst of others. Now, this doesn't mean to assume that everybody is going to be your best friend or that people are going to think the way you think. Understanding that humans are humans, but also trying to look for the good and looking for the common and looking for the ways that you can work with people. I think there's so much value in this. I mean, I guess I want to quote that, like, what's so funny about peace, love, and understanding, right? Like, I still believe. I do. Remembering everybody makes mistakes. Everybody. Everybody goes through hard times, right? And I think learning to acknowledge when it's hard and admit where you're at, but without exaggerating, right? Like, admit, I'm having a hard time, but you don't have to make a meal of it either, right? Meaning, you don't have to say, I can admit I'm going through a hard time without saying, and now I'm going to die of depression, right? No, right? So that we're not catastrophizing, but we're still being vulnerable and honest. That's self-compassion. I do want to offer a couple more, which I want to offer that we celebrate our successes, right? We did that on the show just a few weeks ago. But I think there's value in that, right? To help remind you of good things about you. And then the last thing I wanted to talk about was meditation, and specifically breath meditations. I think there's deep breathing exercises that can help us get out of the loop, right? Like the 4-7-8 breathing, where you breathe in on 4, hold for the count of 7, exhale for 8. Let's do it, actually. Let's just do that real quick. So everybody, if you're available, you can close your eyes if you're comfortable. Put your hand on your heart. We're just going to breathe in on the count of 4, hold it for 7, and exhale for 8. We're going to do that 4 times. Okay, so everybody take a deep breath in. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Last one. In. 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Exhale. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Let your breath return to normal. These deep breathing practices can restore calm, right? Restore peace. Okay. So just to recap, and then I'm going to let you go a little bit early today, but I just want to say, dealing with self-critical thoughts happens, especially when we're going through hard times, challenges, making a mistake, feeling down, life's not working out the way we hoped it would. But I really believe you are worth combating that negative thinking and silencing that inner critic, okay? So remember affirmations, mantras, remember so what? Oh well. Remember mindfulness, self-compassion, breathing exercises, meditation, reaching out to a friend, connecting with other humans, and celebrating your wins, celebrating what's wonderful about you. All right, everybody. So thank you for listening to the Erin Carrera Show on 1-2 Radio. If you want to come find me, I will be available this afternoon. You can come find me probably around 2 p.m. or pretty much all day tomorrow and most of the day on Saturday. And if you don't find me and you want to talk with me, please make a schedule an appointment or make a callback request or email me and we will find a time, because I would love to speak with you. All right. Until next week. Love you. Bye-bye.